Hey, I'm going to talk about a survey we do in New York among local elected officials. We're the independent evaluator for the New York Tobacco Control Program, and I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues in New York, Haven Battles and Christina Paluso, who told me not to say certain things like advocacy. Okay, I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, what I'm going to talk about today is give you an overview of the New York State Bureau of Tobacco Control Program community program efforts focused on tobacco product marketing at the point of sale. I'll briefly tell you the methods we use to document local policymaker beliefs about marketing and policies to support it, and compare the 2011 findings to 2014 findings. There are two mistakes in this presentation, and, well, anyway, the New York State Bureau of Tobacco Control implements a comprehensive tobacco control program. It has a well-established community program. If you're familiar with New York, you know they have a comprehensive clean indoor air law. They have the highest taxes in the nation on tobacco. And they're to the point where they have been working really hard on reducing the influence of tobacco product marketing at the point of sale. In 2005, they had the ASP initiative, advertising, sponsorship, and promotion, where they did primarily advocating with tobacco retailers to reduce or eliminate the tobacco marketing in their stores. It was, and more recently they focused on local policies. In the early years, it was pretty hard because figure you have over 200,000 tobacco retailers in New York State at that time, and there was really no measurable change in the level of tobacco product marketing. So they reduced they changed those efforts to work on policy change in 2009. Right now they have 25 contractor organizations called the Advancing Tobacco-Free Communities Contractors who conduct tobacco control activities within a geographically defined catchment area, which range from a single borough in New York City like Queens to one that has three rural counties. Each contractor has one full-time equivalent for youth reality check work, and the other has a community engagement coordinator. So their model policy goals. New York contractors engage in a two-part process. First, they educate and raise awareness about how much tobacco product marketing there is at the point of the sale, how much youth are exposed to it, and then they educate about research showing that tobacco product marketing at the point of sale is associated with youth smoking. Then they raise awareness about the policy solutions. And those policy solutions are, right now, their model policies, prohibiting tobacco product sales in stores near schools, prohibiting tobacco sales in pharmacies, prohibiting the number of tobacco retailers in the community. The one I left out that should be on next on this list is banning power walls or restricting the display of tobacco products. Restricting redemption of coupons by licensed tobacco retailers, and restricting the use of multi-pack discounts. The last two have only been implemented in the last year or two. Okay, as I said, the community contractors engage in public education. They do media advocacy, but what I'm going to focus on now is their government decision-maker education, because of course we don't no state or federal entity advocates. They educate. So like I said, first they educate about the problem of tobacco marketing at the point of sale, and then they educate about the policy solutions. During the period between when we did these two surveys in 2011 and 2012, they reported over 1,000 visits to state and local policymakers focused on the issue and its policy solutions. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about our methods. The sample was the frame of all elected officials in New York at the county level, plus the highest ranking health department person in each county. For New York City, we included the borough level elected officials and the chief health officer of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. We started with a book. It's a publication by the state that lists local officials, and we augmented it with internet searches. We updated it in 2014, again with internet searches. Each county lists their local elected officials, their county health department lead. In 2011, the frame was 1148, and it was the total sample. In 2014, it was 1108. I was a little freaked, and when I asked, it's there was some redistricting and changes in staffing levels that account for that. So the survey included questions about participant characteristics, their age, gender, political philosophy, and their smoking status, their awareness of select policy issues, and their beliefs. And when we asked them their beliefs, we asked them, how much effect do you think seeing tobacco products displayed and advertised has on whether or not a child becomes a smoker? And they could say much more likely, somewhat more likely, or does not have any effect. And for the policy support question, this is a standard question that we ask about all policies so we can compare them to each other's. We start out with, what is your opinion of a policy that would, and the response categories range from 1, strongly against, to 5, strongly in favor. This time we asked him about, in 2011 we asked about the ban in stores near schools, banning the display, prohibiting the sale of products in pharmacies, and putting a cap or maximum on the number of retailers. In 2014, we added the policy about preventing retailers from accepting coupons that reduce the price, and preventing retailers from offering multi-pack discounts. So, to recruit these people, it's an interesting process. We sent lead letters to participants about 1 week before. We contact them by email and telephone. We do interviews by telephone. They take about 10 to 12 minutes to complete. But these are people who are, a lot of them, they have gatekeepers at the county. They're not always easy to get. They don't necessarily even have an office. So we conduct interviews while people are riding their lawnmowers in the backyard, drinking beer. And I know in a couple cases, you know, we use Southern Charm and got the wives to even get the husbands to participate, because when they were the elected officials. So it's pretty labor intensive, but it's interesting. The data collection period in 2011 was May to August, and in 2014 it was September to November. A little bit longer in 2011 because we got caught in the middle of a budget issue in New York City and had problems getting New York City officials to do our survey. We waited all the analyses because we knew we had the whole frame and we could, any disparities in who we were able to get on the phone versus, you know, who we knew about, we were able to deal with. We used t-tests to compare the 2011 to 2014 responses, and logistic regression analyses so we could look at the predictors of support for the point of sale policies. And then we had some open text questions that we coded by theme. So we had a really good response rate, as you can see. In 2011, we got a 59%, and in 2014, we got a 61% response rate. Again, I attribute this to real persistence, and we have one interviewer, or a couple of them, have these real Southern accents, and they just charm these people in answering the phone. The participants in both years were about the same. They're skewed older, about half of them are 50 to 65 years old. They're mostly men. Almost half of them identify themselves as somewhat or very conservative. Less than 20% say they were somewhat or very liberal. The rest were mostly moderate. A few said none of the above. We had very few current smokers, so we didn't use that variable in any of the analyses. And the distribution of participants by region mirrored the distribution of all the local opinion leaders in the state. So, here are our findings. You can see that about, this shows you the percent of policymakers in both years who said they were somewhat or very much in favor of each policy. And we had significant increases between 2011 and 2014 in everything except the display ban. So, and they went up rather markedly, some of them. You can see the 15 points for the school proximity, 55% for the pharmacy ban, and the retailer cap went up 19% to 32%. And the coupon ban, the discount ban, these were just, we just did in 2014. And like I said, all these were significant increases in support. So I have to say the program was really relieved, because consider in 2011 they had been working on this with policymakers and educating the public for 2 years. And they were really disappointed that they weren't getting more traction. They had no policies adopted or passed. And even though by the time we did this, there had only been one policy adopted and quickly rescinded in Haverstraw, we could show them that they were making progress. So when we did the logistic regressions, the predictors in both years were the same. The largest predictor and most consistent predictor of support for any of the point-of-sale policies was the extent to which a policymaker believed that exposure to point-of-sale tobacco product marketing make it more likely the child became a smoker. And liberals are generally more likely than conservatives. Women tended to support more of the policies than did men. And this was really interesting, is there was no difference between liberal and conservative support for the two new policies, coupon ban and discount ban. We weren't sure why. Maybe they haven't had time to, you know, rev up their anti-ness against it. But anyway, the other thing is awareness of the issues or the policy did not have any relationship with support for the policy. Okay, in the next one, I'm showing you a little about awareness, because again, awareness was, this is the beliefs. Beliefs were the biggest predictors throughout both years of whether someone supported any of these policies. It was significant on every single policy. And you can see that in 2011, 79% endorsed this belief, and in 2014, 71.8%. We really can't tell you why it decreased. What's interesting is when you look at the junk food, you can see that 90% of people we surveyed, and we kind of put junk food in there so we could compare it with tobacco, 90% of people believe that junk food displays have an impact on what kids eat. And when you look more in depth at these data, most of the people who say tobacco product display marketing has an effect on kids smoking say it has somewhat of an effect. But when you look at the junk food one, about 80% of the people who endorse the belief think that that has a big effect. So it's kind of interesting. All right. And we also asked about awareness. And the interesting thing in this is you can see the huge increase in awareness of the pharmacy ban and the tobacco display ban. And even though this wasn't really related to whether people supported the policy, we thought it was really interesting, because what you see here is during this time period, during the same year, Haverstraw Village, I think they have fewer than 5,000 residents, adopted a product display ban against Powerwalls, and almost immediately they were sued, and the people were sued personally who were in the leadership, by the New York Association of Convenience Store Owners and 7 tobacco companies. And of course, you know what that means. No one wants to have a lawsuit against them, and especially not a personal one. So they rescinded the policy pretty quickly. And you see the huge increase in awareness of the pharmacy ban. This was right after CVS had made the announcement that they were going to quit selling tobacco products. Okay, so here's the stuff that's always really fun for people. We know that policymakers support the policies when they endorse these beliefs that they have an effect on kids smoking. But why do they oppose them? So we asked policymakers who opposed a subset of policies to tell us why. In 2011, the policies we asked them about were the display ban and the retailer cap. And in 2014, because they were new policies, we asked about the coupon ban and the discount ban. This is so familiar to those of you in tobacco control. Okay, first there's the people who are against government regulations. You know, I respect the health issues, and they talk about the big brother nanny state, and they go on about the nanny state. I had to increase the length of text that people could enter into the survey because they went on, and my colleagues in New York love this stuff because, you know, some of it's crazy. And then 2014, you can see the government regulations. The example is the government's trying to pick winners and losers. I'm leery of government intervention. Okay, then you've heard this one too. Policies infringe on personal freedoms. And we kind of differentiated that against government regulations. To go into the anti-government regulation category, they had to explicitly say something, you know, about the government, big government nanny state. In this one, we put all the responses that focused on individual freedoms. You know, they're taking the right away from a merchant. Individuals have a choice, and we're overregulated. You hear a lot, you can't regulate morality. The next one was the slippery slope. You've heard that before, you know, alcohol, beer, wine, condoms, you know, it's going to be bacon next. It was interesting. We didn't hear the slippery slope with the coupon bans in 2014. And then there's the policy won't be effective. And this is where people go into their personal beliefs about what they think does cause kids to smoke. Learn from parents. They talk about more education. You can't control commerce with these policies. Education is the key. But again, it was interesting because in 2014, the bad for business one, that one. How could I miss the bad for business one? You know, they talk about they are against new burdens on business. I'm against anything that would curtail the retailer. But interesting enough, this was the least cited reason other than the not cited reason for opposing the policy for the coupon and multi-pack discount ban. So, just in summary, support for all the point sale policies assessed in both years increased significantly except for the display ban in the 3 years. Beliefs about the impact of tobacco product marketing at the point of sale decreased but remained high. Awareness of both the policy of the tobacco display ban and the pharmacy ban increased between 2011 and 2014. And when we think about why, again, I said this, the Haverstraw Village got a lot of coverage in New York during this time, their display ban. And the pharmacy ban, 300% is a pretty big increase, with over 70% of participants having heard something about it. And again, we figured this had to do with the CVS decision to stop selling tobacco products. What do we do with this stuff? We actually try to design studies and use data in a way to help the program. And this was such a relief for them that it was very morale building to see that these policies had more support. But it suggests the program's efforts are working. I can't say it for sure. The next steps are to examine the relationships between their efforts and policy support. We did some initial analyses of about a year's worth of data in 2011. It was promising. And, you know, that's kind of the holy grail if we can really tie their level of effort by geographic region to support. So that's the next step. The strong relationship between beliefs about the effects of point-of-sale tobacco marketing and youth smoking in those models that include gender and political philosophy, it really supports the program's continued focus on making policymakers aware of the research supporting this relationship as their first step. And then a lot of contractors will come back and say, I live in a region with a bunch of conservative legislatures. They're hopeless. And what we would say back to them is that this is evidence that if they continue to increase awareness and educate about the research, that they have an opportunity to reach these people, and maybe they'll build support for them, even among their most conservative ones. Okay, the reasons for opposing point-of-sale policies gave opportunities for education. One thing is that many policymakers don't seem to be aware that their preferred anti-tobacco intervention like school, education, youth access, they still talk about youth access, is already being implemented. And in 2011, several participants talked about the potential for corruption when determining who could and couldn't sell tobacco products in your schools or if you restrict the number in your community. And so when we talk to the program, we advise them to make sure in your model policies you really define the process for how you're going to implement.